countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our marked price calculator on farmersjournal.ie. Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, school children in Galway on growing their own vegetables. Can organic farming grow big in Ireland? New rules on rights of way on farmland. And later, John Spillane with the Dance of the Cherry Trees.
Text 51551. Email countrywide at rte.ie and tweet at RTE Countrywide.
But first,
but around the final bend, Heaven Help Us leads by 4 or 5 lengths. Chased hard by Blue Sari, on down towards the final flight in the Coral Cup. It's Heaven Help Us bounding on down to the last. Pursued hard by Blue Sari, but the lead is 6 lengths. Heaven Help Us soars out over the final flight. Blue Sari takes a tumbling fall. Hampers T Clipper and Monte Cristo. And it's Heaven Help Us storming up the Cheltenham Hill. She's drawing further and further clear. Heaven Help Us runs riot to win the Coral Cup.
Well, a meeting like never before still enthralled Irish racing fans at Prestbury Park this week. An amazing 23 Irish trained winners, 20 Irish bred winners, and 10 trainers for 20 owners. 12 Irish jockeys rode winners, including the star of the show, Rachel Blackmore. And what a week it was also for trainer Henry de Bromhead. But there was lots of dreams coming true, including the story of Heaven Help Us, which you've just heard there, trained by Paul Hennessy, who is best known as a greyhound trainer and for his greyhound successes, until this mare, bred in his own yard, romped home at 33-1. It's a tiny operation, and the win is really the stuff of dreams. Paul Hennessy, good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you keeping?
I'm keeping well. Congratulations, Paul. How does it feel now, even just listening back to the final few furlongs there?
It's unbelievable, even to hear the recording of it on the phone. It's just amazing. It really is, and you're dead right. Tiny operation with one mare, and she bred that foal. And we have about 2 or 3 horses here in training, and that's about it. It's only a bit of a pastime, really. We have a small bit of grounds. We're only situated on about 8 acres, so. And I suppose it's just an extension of what we were born and reared to. We were born from farm and stock, you know what I mean? And we had dairy cows at home, but to go over there with her and to win that, we weren't really expecting her to win her, to be honest. We were hoping she would run well, maybe 5th or 6th, and everyone would be delighted, but. The extended trip probably brought out more improvement in her, and she was in great form. It was quite amazing.
Whereabouts are you exactly, Paul? And when you talk about we, it's more of a case of I, isn't it, than we?
Well, no, there's no I in team now. I mean, you know what I mean? Even with the greyhounds here, we have great help. Susan and the family and Michael English, who walks with me to dogs, he's with me for 35 years. And Niall Prendergast, the chap that helps me with the horses. And, you know, he comes in and rides them out, basically. And I do the rest of the work, mucking them out or cleaning the yard or whatever has to be done. I have a bit of catching up to do at the moment, let me tell you as well.
So. Yeah. Well, you drove her over yourself, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. Well, there's very strict protocols this year. It had to be that way. And, you know, I just said, look, I'll go on myself and keep everything nice and tidy and quiet. And drove her over myself, got the toolbox, rented it off of George Mullins, and brought her on. And look at the rest is history. You know, she's easy to look after. When I was over there, Richie Condon, who rode her, he flew out and he exercised it every morning for me. We did a bit of that. We went out on a Sunday night, and on Monday morning, Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, we went down to the centre of the track, which is for, there's a schooling ground in the centre of Cheltenham there. And basically all you'd be doing is taking her out and stretching her legs, trotting her out and stuff like that, you know. And it went unbelievably well. She landed in Cheltenham and she just, you know, she switched into another gear, like kind of game on gear, that she knew. She loves competition, you know, and I suppose the closer it got to the race, then the better climb she was in, looking forward to it, like, you know.
See, so at 33-1, were you able to get a few bob? Were you able to tell anybody, look, she's looking good?
Were you able to tell? Yeah, there was loads of people that backed her, like, I mean, and you see, at those kind of prices, it's only fun, you know, a small few quid goes an awful long way when you want to play. And she went out to 40-1.
God.
You know, the kids here had a few quid in her each way and different things like that, and I don't bet. I gave it up. Michal O'Meara-Hurtig asked me one time, Paul, he says, for a man that has plenty of winners and you don't bet, he said, is that by design or were you cured? And I said, Michal, I was cured, and that's the best expression I've ever heard.
And he was probably talking to you about the greyhounds, because that's the primary business.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. And we just branched off into this, as I said before. I've kept a mare here and had a foal on and off over the years for a long time, you know. We also had a kind of a passing interest in it. But a few years ago, a friend of mine said to me, why don't you try and train one particular little horse that we had here ourselves, a horse called Cheers Buddy, and I thought he was mad. But anyway, two of us owned him, so it didn't really matter if it went pear-shaped. We could always give him back to a trainer. But we had a go at it, and lo and behold, we brought him to Dundalk, and he won first time out. Now, Shamie Heffernan had been hugely helpful to me. He schooled him two or three times and was guiding me along to keep doing or get him a bit fitter or whatever or ease off, and little horse came out and won in Dundalk on a Friday night, and he won in Gorn on a Sunday, and I thought it was simple, but I found out since that, you know, there's an awful lot of water flows under the bridge before you get another winner. But
and would there be similarities now between training dogs and horses?
Well, there is. I mean, basically, I suppose, you know, if you break it down, what you're trying to do is have an animal well, and that they're sound and that they're fit, you know what I mean, and in good form, I suppose. Now, to get them to that point then is the tricky bit, you know what I mean? It's the same with the dogs. Like, you'd exercise them, you set a kind of a routine. Well, I do anyway, set a routine exercise that we follow up that path. And basically with her, you know, we just do kind of endurance training, you know what I mean, nice and steady, and do it for a bit longer. And you know, and it works. You get him to a level of fitness then without forcing it, without pushing him, and you usually leave the run in the tank that way, you know what I mean, rather than sort of doing fast work. Now, look at, I mean, people need to do fast work for horses racing on the flat over shorter distances and things like that, but that's just what we've done anyway, and it worked out great with her, and it suits her, and she suits us, so it's amazing.
And as you said, you bred her yourself. She was born there on the farm at home. And you named her, heaven help us.
Yes, Well, her mother had four foals, I think. And the first one was born on the first Friday in February. And I called him First Friday because my dad got me good to my great devotion to the Sacred Heart on First Friday, and my mum too. And I called him First Friday because he was born on the First Friday. And he won four races for us in Dundalk. He was a great character. He was a bit iffy. He maybe put his head in front and maybe wouldn't, but we great sport with him. And her next foal then was a filly, and we called her Thy Will Be Done, and she's here at the moment. She's a broodmare. And the next foal then, believe it or not, was born at 3 o'clock on Good Friday, and I'm saying, this is it, this is going to be the one that's going to do everything. I called her Merciful Hour because of the Hour of Great Mercy, and I'm afraid it didn't really work. She had ability, but she didn't like part of it. She held on to it herself. So, and then Heaven Help Us came along, and I had no great designs on naming her, and when it came to naming her, I don't know where the name came from. It just did, and I said to myself, that's a grand bit of a name now, and I'll put that on her, and that's what happened.
And can you figure to me, have you been able to celebrate? Because I know Richie was saying it's a pity the pubs weren't open.
Well, Richie is 24 and I'm 60, so we'd have different forms of celebration. I don't need to celebrate, to be honest with you. What the feeling we had coming home, and, you know, the whole lot coming in, there's nothing that could have, you know, that I could have either drank or smoked that would have made me feel. And I used to drink and smoke as a young lad. But anyway, there was nothing that else that could have added to that. That was such a thrill. And, you know, that's it. Like, it's not a matter of, oh, we'll do something else now next year. That's it. It's done and dusted. You know what I mean? You couldn't even dream of replicating that, to be honest.
You can't get better than that.
No, your dreams are your dreams. And that was, she won a maiden hurl in Cheltenham there last year. We went over for a bit of fun. John Turner, who owns her, a good friend of ours here, we keep a couple of vehicles for him as well, and he lives near Cheltenham, and we brought her over to run in the maiden hurl and made a kind of a busman's weekend out of it, and she went and won the race. So she has been wonderful for us. It's been a dream all the way through it, really.
Well, listen, the excitement and the delight and the surprise and the elation, yeah, it's all wrapped up in your voice and your chat with us this morning, Paul. It's been lovely chatting to you. Well done, Kilkenny winning something this year anyway, for a start.
So, yeah, come here. Come here now. That wasn't meant to be part of the script. Put the kettle on one as well the same day. She's a Kilkenny mayor as well. So Kenny had a double. You must be from Tipperary, eh?
No. Jeez, definitely not. Listen, go and put the kettle on. You deserve it.
I will do.
And thanks very much, Paul. And
look, we'll
go down and chat to you down there for a longer chat sometime.
Yeah, you're more than welcome.
No problem. Right. Good luck. Thanks, Paul. See you now. That's Paul Hennessy there. What a week for him and so many others involved in Irish racing. Just unbelievable to win 23 of the races. There used to be a time when we'd been 10, we'd be delighted, but even less than that. So a great week, even if there were no fans there. Now, if you're a farmer who either has a right of way across another farmer's land or indeed has a neighbour with a right of way across yours, you need to think about changes in the law that are coming into play later this year. Now, Ashley Meehan of Ashley Meehan Agricultural Solicitors joins me with more information on this. Ashley, good morning to you. So what's the current legal situation regarding rights of way here?
Good morning, Damien. Well, I suppose a right of way is a legal right established generally by usage or a grant to pass along a specific route. And most people are familiar with the concept of a right of way. And I suppose the majority of them are not registered on a person's title, and all has been fine with them. Now, with the advent of what we call e-conveyancing, where they want to try and get everything online for conveyancing, the law in relation to rights of way changed in 2009, and it now requires people that have private rights of way, we call them unregistered rights of way, to have them registered on their title. Initially, it was on by the 30th of November 2012, but I suppose given the huge amount of unregistered rights of way across the country, there was a lot of lobbying, and that was extended to the 30th of November 2021,
okay,
which is a deadline, obviously, which is looming.
But why has it taken so long?
Because
back to 2009,
people, you know, people have put it on the long finger to a certain extent, and I suppose what has happened is that the law was relaxed in 2011, whereby initially what had been suggested was that people had to get a court order in order to have the right of way registered, and obviously this caused consternation. So they brought in another procedure called the Section 49A procedure. It's what's called the Form 68, whereby a person can apply to the land registry directly in order to register what's called an uncontested right of way. So typically what it meant was that the person who was using the right of way would swear an affidavit, basically swearing that they had been using the right of way for 20 years plus, without force, without secrecy, without consent. That application was lodged with a map which would detail the right of way and also your fee of €130, and that it would be processed, and the land registry would typically write out to the landowner over whose land the right of way exists, kind of saying, do you agree to this, and giving them a period, typically 21 days, in order to object. And if they didn't object, the registration proceeded. If they did object, typically the land registry turned it down, and then you were off to court to try and fight it out as to whether there was a right of way there or not. I suppose an issue that has arisen now is that, given that it was put in the long finger by a lot of people, there's a backlog now in the land registry, whereby even if you apply now, there's a good chance that your right of way mightn't be registered by the cutoff date, which is the 30th of November 2021. And I suppose the upshot of that is that if there's a glitch, or if we'll say the person objects to the registration of the right of way, and you don't find that out until after the 30th of November 2021, it's too late to come under what's called the old system. And then you need to come under what's called the new system, whereby it depends on your use of the right of way since the 1st of December 2009.
Right. And the issue, I would have thought, only comes up if you're going to sell land, because there will be a lot of farmers have this agreement with their neighbours, and it's never mentioned. Do they have to still go and register it?
Yeah, it affects. We'll say there's a couple of different ways in which it's very important now. Firstly, from the schemes point of view, which is so important in farming now, Damien.
Yeah.
If you're claiming the BPS, your basic payment scheme entitlements, GLAS organic farming scheme, the rules for those particular schemes provide that there must be independent and suitable access for animals and machinery. And it specifically defines independent access as means a public or private roadway or by defined right of way. And I typically find in my own practice that farmers aren't aware of this, and it only really becomes an issue where a department might carry out an inspection and then they go, where's the right of way or defined right of way? And there isn't one, and then they could suffer a penalty. Another one where it's becoming very important is where a person wants to take, maybe borrow money and wants to use the land as security for a loan. And obviously the bank needs to be satisfied that if the person reneges on the loan or defaults, that if they take the land, if they try to sell it to try and recoup the money, that there is access and that they can access the land. So they are insisting, and they have been for a good number of years, that there is a registered right of way, or we'll say that the land over which they're taking the security bounds a public road. So it's very important from those aspects. And then the other thing I'd find from a practical perspective, you might have two farmers of the same vintage and they've get on well and they've been, there's been no access, no issues around the right of way. But, if the farm maybe changes hands, is sold, or maybe there's succession, and a younger generation might inherit it, that there might be problems then. There might be, maybe about the extent of the right of way, where typically the farmer had been going in and out at certain times of the year, and there was a certain amount of freedom. There mightn't be that same element of freedom, that there might be stickier, there might be a bit more awkward.
Yeah.
So I think generally it's good where you have a good working relationship with the other party that you take steps in order to register the right of way rather than waiting for a problem to arise.
Okay, well, finally, Aisling, are you getting many queries in this? Would this affect now many farm owners or many farmers and landowners?
A huge amount of queries in the last couple of weeks, especially because the Law Society has just issued two practice notes in it. Well, there was one just before Christmas as well. So they have flagged potential problems with it. One being that with this, what we call the easier application direct to the land registry, because of the backlog now, and also because there's, as part of that application, you have to swear an affidavit. And as part of that, cut off other options in order to register rights away, so that they're advising people now to maybe not go down that procedure if there is a problem that they may need to rely on another avenue to register the right away down the road.
Okay.
And then secondly, from the point of view of, we'll say, if there's foreshore or if there's a right away against the state, there's the longer period of 30 or 60 years in which you have to be using the right away in order to register it. So I suppose my advice would be to farmers to get onto it straight away, to talk to their solicitor. And if possible, ideally, if you can talk to the other landowner, and if they're willing to acknowledge that they would just simply sign a deed and that you'd have that registered rather than have to go down the other route and maybe have to take proceeding against the landowner, because that's always obviously a matter of last resort.
Absolutely, a way you don't want to be going falling up with the neighbours on that. Well, listen, Aisling, thank you. It's very timely. It's important information, and the farmers that it affects that are listening to us will understand deeply what you're on about there, and that they need to get cracking on it. So Aisling Meehan of Aisling Meehan Agricultural Solicitors in County Clare, thanks as always for joining us on Countrywide.
RTE Radio 1.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our Mart Price Calculator on farmersjournal.ie.
And I can tell you we're getting lots of nice messages, texts and tweets about Paul Hennessy's uplifting interview at the start of the programme. Now, it's 10 years since Get Ireland Growing began its campaign to teach children how to grow their own veg. And even though schools were closed during lockdown, they were recently invited to apply for this year's kit, which comes with 5 packs of different seeds and enough compost, growing cups and fun lesson plans for entire classrooms. Now, Countrywide visited two schools in Galway who are dab hands at this. The Galway City School of St Pat's, where Principal Jarlath Conboy and pupils in second class won the National Big Grow Award last year. But firstly, we went to the much smaller Skull Vriachán in Rossmuck in Connemara with Principal Michael O'Malley there to welcome Lorna Siggins.
Bien mod skutchis fakti agust.
Usen chip family in fresh na. Usen in the part. Cuz come on with your name.
She's a comparge.
Rino Monin is talking about the benefits of fiamin or seaweed as a fertilizer. He's in the Tullon or Polytunnel at Skull Vriachán in Rossmuck in Connemara with his school principal, Micheál O'Malley. The two-teacher school with 31 pupils is a very enthusiastic participant in the Big Grow project, which involves some 50,000 school children all over Ireland.
My name is Clodagh Nicanella. I am 11 years old and this is our school. And I'm talking about the tunnel of our school, and this is where we grow our vegetables and things like that. This is our onions and our turnips over there, and we also grow lettuce, and we have to wait until they grow. It might take a long time, but we have to wait then. And when they're ready, we have to pick them up, we have to clean them, and then you could bring them home and eat them as your lunch or dinner or supper. It's really good and it's very important to eat all of those things because they're really good for you. But it takes a long time, so we have to be patient.
Back in Galway City, St Pat's Primary School on the banks of the Corrib is also a Big Grow participant and won a national award last year. One of second class's secret weapons is music. They are convinced that it helps their plants and their beautiful flowers to grow.
We just did the chorus, so it goes G.
It's good to play music to plants because it helps them grow better. Because plants can actually hear you.
So this was the area down here. It was kind of a concrete patch sort of area. There wasn't really anything here at all. And then we transformed. Then we used recycled materials. Wooden pallets are drilled into the walls. We've got tires here being used as planters as well. So you get to incorporate recycling into results. That's fantastic for them too. So as a city centre school here, we didn't think we'd really have the space to do a project like this. But we managed to turn this small space into a vertical garden using containers, wooden pallets, old tyres. And the children were massive help in doing it as well. So essentially it was created by the children for the children. So what was once a small concrete patch with nothing there is now an area that they can... It's like another classroom basically in the school. It's for an area that was never used. It actually needs a timetable on the door now because all the classes want to come out. Because you get to mix in your English, your science, geography, anything you want, you can have it out here. So it's lovely. I always had an interest in it. My father was always big into gardening. He always had things growing at home down the fields. So there was an interest sparked, I suppose, at a young age in that sense. And the children here, a lot of the children as city centre children, they wouldn't really get as much exposure to that. So when they see here fruit and vegetables, they think of Tesco and Aldi and all the shops that sell them. But to actually have them to see where they grow, it's brilliant for them. So in a way, you're bringing the countryside into the city, and that's fantastic for the kids. And if you look in front of the school, you have the city centre, you have the busy shops, the traffic, all the people. But then when you come out the back, it's a completely different world altogether. So you have the nice calming effect, the river, and it's very picturesque here as well. We've even the great wildlife on our doorstep here as well. So coming into spring now, we'll start to see the swans and the cygnets coming up in here, down here by the river, the ducklings. And that's what helps in the garden too as well. So we've our lettuce, we've our spinach, our peas, and we work at Mary in the Swan Rescue, and we donate all of our food then over to them.
So they're going to show me the garden now.
Yeah. These, they love the chives here. This one, someone loved this so much they pulled the whole plant.
Yeah, that was me. Sorry, teacher.
Somebody was very. I thought there was cattle in here grazing or something when I saw that. So we love the chives. So if you'd like to talk about that, there, guys, Lauren will ask you a question.
We grew grass a couple of weeks ago, and now it's growing. It just used to be a big muddy patch, but now that we planted some grass, it's growing.
So when we were in lockdown, our teacher, he had a bunch of packets of seeds and he sent them home to all of us. And my mum bought a bunch of flower pots a good few years ago, and we couldn't use them, so she was going to chew them out. But then when we got the seeds from our teacher, we reused the parts.
There's nutrients in seaweed.
Sure is, well done.
Listen, Aiden, stop eating chives.
No, guys, listen.
We got lavender, we got chives, we got more chives, we got more lavender, and we got daffodils.
Now, guys, don't eat for a minute, because if you're talking with your mouth full, it won't sound good.
We grew these sunflowers and, it was very fun. It was fun touching the soil and putting it in place, because it made us happy, because soil makes you happy when you touch it.
We went to the beach and we collected some seaweed and shells.
You've got your own little greenhouse there as well.
Yeah, we grow plants in there and flowers.
We cut a slice of tomatoes with the seed in it, and then we got a little pot of soil and we put the tomato in there, and then we put some soil on top of it to cover it up, and we're hoping it'll grow.
I coloured one of my shells to be a ladybug and I put it on my tomato so it looks nice.
We want the intro!
And they were the brilliant pupils there at St. Pat's Primary School in Galway, ending that report from Lorna Siggins. Now, as you know, there's a big push towards organic farming right across the EU with this Farm to Fork strategy, which has been launched by the EU, hoping that around 25% of farms will be organic by 2030. And this month, the Minister for State, Pippa Hackett, opened the organic farming scheme, which supports farmers through the transition to organic farming and for some years afterwards. Now, the closing date for applications for this is the end of April. Now, we're going to chat to Grace Maher of the Irish Organic Farmers and Growers Association and Dara McCullough presently. But you may remember before Christmas, Dara met some organic farmers for Countrywide. And here's a little reprise, beginning with Tom Phelan in County Leash, who, along with his son Alan, moved from dry stock to organic dairying.
Type of cow that you went for, the type of genetics you went for, any different from the type that you would have in a conventional herd?
Well, in organics you don't have the option of having a very high yielding cow because you're only allowed to use 40% concentrates at any one time.
So there's no point in going with a Holstein cow?
No, not a pure Holstein cow by any means. You don't have that option.
Yeah. So what I'm looking at here, I'm looking at browns and brownie blacks and whitey blacks. And there's a mixed bag.
There is, yeah. But they are a high EBI herd. Yeah. They came in conventional. These cows, while their milk is accepted as organic milk, they themselves would never be deemed organic. I did get a text lately saying that there was an outlet opening up for organic cow meat.
Yeah.
But these cows themselves will never be organic from a meat point of view, because they weren't born organic.
Yeah.
But the calves that have been born on this farm this year, they are organic and will always be organic.
If one of your cows gets sick now, what can you do for
her? Some people may have the impression that if a cow gets sick, you have to stand looking at her as she pines away and dies. Yeah. But nothing could be further from the truth. Of course, what the vets say is final. If the vet deems she needs an antibiotic for her welfare, she has to get an antibiotic. You have to abide by longer withdrawals, but you can still use an antibiotic if it's necessary.
In County Kildare, Graham Harris converted to organic tillage farming along with running some organic sheep. His brother Trevor had been organic for some time, and Graham told Dara that he may have been right all along.
I suppose I'm leaving my hedgerows grow bigger. They used to be cut back
Now I'm going to leave them go.
You had your lovely, tight...
Tidy.
Short
tidy,
back and sides.
Clean, yeah. Those words I often use in farming, tidy and clean. I remember turning around to my brother Trevor. I just had all the hedges scalped. And I said to him, what do you think? Looks great, doesn't it? And he goes, he was trying to be diplomatic. He says, I wouldn't like it. He just said very carefully to me. Yeah. And I was looking over his hedges. And I was thinking, I wonder why he doesn't like the hedges like this. Yeah. Whereas now, that was only probably about 4 years ago. Whereas now I'd look at it totally different. I'd prefer to have the hedges full of life.
But there's a reason for having your hedge cut tight, right? I mean, you want to get in and plant as much of the field as possible because every acre counts, right?
Mm. Yeah, I'd see that as part of the problem, though. Like, the problem is we need more and more every year. Like, I was looking at, you'd look at farmers and they'd be cutting decent crops, but they'd still be below the line. Maybe they'd be cutting a 3.5 ton of winter barley. It's not enough anymore because of the way things have gone. So farming's in trouble that way, that we need to take more and more. So we're now looking at pushing the hedges back, taking that bit for ourselves. Whereas when we take that, we do harm. I feel that the farm will work better as an entity if it's left with the bigger hedges. I shouldn't need to go after them. They're going to lock up carbon as well. So if I have big hedges, I'm locking up carbon. So it's definitely performing something good for the environment. It's good for the wildlife.
In North County Dublin, Pat and Jenny McNally moved into organic horticulture more than 20 years ago. And this, along with an on-farm market and cafe, provides employment for them and five of their children.
They just, like, you can see for yourself. So we have, like, padron peppers, shishito peppers, bell peppers, your normal, like, long peppers. Poblano peppers was a new one for us this year. And then our chilies.
Neve, how's it going?
Hi, Dara. Good, good. At the moment, we're just a takeaway cafe, but it's our other sister, Sarah, now, who is also, she's been half and half, so she's also returning. She had a catering company before this. She ran with her business partner.
Sarah, good morning.
Morning. How are you?
So this is your little independent republic in here now.
I had my own kind of catering thing the last few years, and then we actually decided to take a break from it this year, but then the pandemic hit, and yeah, it just kind of became permanent, me being here. This area, like, I love it. I grew up here, but there isn't a massive community feeling, but it's kind of nice. I mean, like, getting to know, like, neighbours who I've lived beside all my life and never knew before. So they're kind of coming down and getting coffee and, like, picking up a treat or a sandwich or something.
Well, joining me now is the man himself, Dara McCullough, and Grace Maher, Development Officer with the Irish Organic Farmers and Growers Association. Dara, to you first, as a conventional farmer yourself, what struck you about the visits and chats you had with these people recently converted to organics?
Morning, Damien. Yeah, I really enjoyed the visits to the three farms. They were all great characters. Tom and Alan Phelan there in Leash, who had converted to dairying, what really struck me was how Tom really dispelled all those myths that I suppose exist in conventional farmers still, you know, that their stock, they're going to have to watch their stock piling away if they get sick. And also how smart they were in terms of the conversion. You know, they didn't take on any major borrowings that are usually associated with transition over to dairy. They used the proceeds from the sucklers to build a parlour. They bought the herd as calves, so there wasn't a big outlay there. And they used that the payments from the organic scheme then to keep the cash flow going. And that was all smart. And, you know, they weren't zealots about organic farming because they kind of felt that the way they were farming conventionally wasn't that far from how they have to farm organically. But the reason that they went to organic was because it allowed them on maybe a grazing area of 100 acres to make a living out of maybe 65 cows, which is considered maybe a little bit on the smaller side of dairying now. And they reckon that you can make the same income out of 65 cows organically as you can out of 100 cows conventionally. So maybe having to run less hard to produce the same amount of money. Graham Harris, what struck me was he'd been looking over the ditch, so to speak, at his brother, Trevor, who had been farming organically for the past 20 years. And I suppose it took him all that time to convince himself that organic was the way to go. And now that he has made the leap, he feels it's a complete no-brainer. I mean, he is totally committed to it and very content in what he does.
Yeah.
And then the McNallys, I mean, if you want to picture a family of honest to goodness, hardworking people who eat, sleep and drink farming and everything that you can do with farm produce, then you've got the McNally family in North County Dublin. And again, they're making, you know, 7 full-time incomes out of maybe less than 100 acres of land. And Damien, the thing that I came away with from there is the world of possibilities that opens up in terms of what you can grow in Ireland when you put up polytunnels.
Yeah.
They really just, you know, open a whole world of different produce. I mean, they were producing all kinds of exotic tomatoes and chili peppers and all kinds of wonderful things.
Yeah,
as it is possible.
As we heard in that report. And they all sound happy and content and that they should have done it years ago. And Grace, are we noticing an increase in the number of farmers that are interested in switching to organic? Because it's still only 2% of total farming in Ireland is done organically.
Good morning, Damien and Dara. Yes, we are actually seeing an increase in farmers who are inquiring about coming into organics. And in practice, it isn't something that farmers decide to do overnight. You know, they put in time and effort and research. They go visit other farms when it's permitted, obviously. And they look at the options for their individual farms. And obviously now, because the organic farming scheme is open and has a target, you know, to increase by about 30%, so bringing in another 400 to 500 farmers in Ireland to certified organic production. That's obviously spiked an interest of late, but certainly more farmers are looking at it as a viable option for their farm. And in terms of sectoral like balance, we do see, I mean, this week alone, the main processors in the dairy, tillage and beef sector in organics were asking for more farmers to come in because, I mean, we're looking at unprecedented, really, and accelerated growth in terms of market value and market sales. If you look at the European market over the last decade, the market value has more than doubled. And so this is what we need to actually wake up and kind of be aware of. Sales in Europe in 2019 were 45 billion, and that's predicted to double in the next few years. So I think Irish farmers, you know, yes, we're at 2%. And you mentioned at the outset of this piece, Damien, about the European target to reach 25% of organic land by 2030. And we certainly need, you know, in an Irish context, we need political support at all levels to deliver concrete action to support conversion to organic farming, and market development is crucial.
As Dara said there, there seems to be a lot of misconceptions out there among farmers who believe that it's more difficult to transition, that they're not allowed to use, not allowed to treat sick animals and so on. And so there are a few myths there. But compared to other countries, due to the grass-based system and relatively smaller herds, as Dara said, are some farmers well on their way to being organic on many Irish conventional farms as we speak?
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, more extensive farming system is what's favoured in organics, and that's what we do have in Ireland. So absolutely, farmers have to do very little in some instances to convert to organic. But obviously, conversion needs to happen on the farmer. And I think Graham Harris is a classic example there that Dara spoke about earlier. You know, you can be watching from over the hedge, but until you make that conscious decision yourself to convert to organic, then it's when it will really happen. And when farmers do that, they actually stick with organic farming for a long term. You know, we get farmers, you know, very few farmers leave organic production once they come into it because they really like that system of production. So certainly, you know, there are misconceptions, but we're doing our best to dispel those myths out there, you know.
Okay, Dara, just briefly, if larger numbers do go organic, like we won't hit 25% in Ireland by 2030, but we will certainly increase between now and then, and particularly if this annual scheme is continued by the department to encourage farmers to go organic. But when you have too many, does it lose its niche status then?
Yeah, I think this is a key concern because, you know, on paper, there's endless demand for organic produce. And, you know, Grace mentioned, you know, the current market is 45 billion of a spend in Europe. But there is the kind of slightly inconvenient facts out there. Like, for example, 70% of organic sheep meat produced here at the moment is being sold at conventional prices. So that's one sector where organics isn't really paying any dividends for the farmers involved. And remember what they say about commodity markets, Damien, you know, all food is a commodity at the end of the day. All it takes is a 2% shortage for price to rocket. But the flip side of that is that a 2% surplus can also make prices plummet. So,
okay,
you know, if there was a pot of gold out there for the taking in organics, farmers would have taken it long before now, I think.
Okay, well, back to you finally and briefly, Grace. Any farmer listening to us now that is thinking about organics, they have a chance now to apply for the status or for this scheme. Just when is the closing date and how can they receive more help? I believe you have a couple of webinars coming up which might be useful.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, as you mentioned, the closing date is the 30th of April. So the Irish Organic Association have two webinars on March 31st and April 7th, the both Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m. in the evening. And that looks at the paperwork aspect because to join this current scheme, you have to send in an application form to the Irish Organic Association. And then the second step is to register on the Ag Food Portal scheme. So we have webinars. We're very happy to help farmers talk through the paperwork side of it and talk through the process. And I'd encourage any farmer who's looking at coming into organics to just join into those webinars, and we're happy to help.
All right. And all you have to do is text organic to 51444. Text organic to 51444 for more information on that. Thank you very much indeed, Grace. And your own website will have more details on it. And Dara, thank you as well. That's almost all we have time for in Countrywide this week. But the lovely weather this week may have helped cheer us up a little bit amidst all the bad news. And the spring blossoms remind me of this time 19 years ago, because my own firstborn, my eldest daughter, Dervla, was a tiny baby. And John Spillane had a new song out, and it always seemed to be playing on the radio that spring during night feeds and afternoon walks when it was released back in 2002. It's a celebration of this time of the year when the cherry blossoms begin to bloom, and it acknowledges that we've travelled another year in life, and what a year it has been. And when he was here with Marty a few weeks ago, John Spillane also recorded this for us on Countrywide. This is John Spillane with The Dance of the Cherry Trees. Until I talk to you at the same time next week, bye-bye and thanks for listening.
Let me tell you about the cherry trees. Every April in our town, they put on the most outrageous clothes, and they sing and they dance around. Hardly anybody sings or dances, hardly anybody dances or sings in this town that I call my own. You have to hand it to the cherry trees, and they seem to be saying to me anyway, you know, we've traveled all around the sun. You know, it's taken us one whole year. Well done, everyone. Well done. Cherry blossom in the air. Cherry blossom on the street. Cherry blossom in your hair. And a blossom at your feet. You know, we've traveled all around the sun. You know, it's taken us one whole year. Well done, everyone. Well done. On behalf of me and the cherry trees, well done. Well done, everyone. You know me, sometimes I think I'm getting old, not as young as I used to be. So it means even more to me to see the dance of the cherry trees. They seem to be saying, is it only to me? You know, we've traveled all around the sun. You know, it's taken us one whole year. Well done, everyone. Well done. You know, we've traveled all around the sun. You know, it's taken us one whole year. Well done, everyone. Well done. On behalf of me and the cherry trees, well done. Well done, everyone. Well done, everyone.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal. Have you cattle to sell? Find out what they're worth with our Mart price calculator on farmersjournal.ie.
RTE Radio 1.